The top five on the Rokan Show. Five. Let's go. Four, three, two.
Now, it's the top five at five on the Rokan Show, sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
We'll do just that.
Number five.
These are the top five, either most newsworthy or most interesting or most funny things that happened today. So, number five, being the most newsworthy, Illinois health officials announced that the second confirmed case of coronavirus in the United States is here in Chicago. Yes. If you're wondering, I did freak out when I woke up this morning and I saw that. But I shouldn't have, according to Dr. Allison Hardaway, who is the Chicago Department of Public Health Commissioner. She says that this particular woman who has these tests positive for the virus took precautions, including contacting her doctor before arriving at the office.
A few days after arriving home, the patient began to feel unwell. She called ahead to alert her doctor to her illness rather than just presenting to a clinic or emergency department. This is exactly what any potentially ill returning traveler from Wuhan should do. Call ahead and seek medical care.
Okay. All right. Now, the Chicago Health Commissioner also said, don't freak out, Ro.
She has not taken public transportation. She has not attended any large gatherings. And actually, to our best knowledge at this point, she has not had extended close contact with anyone outside her home since returning from China and prior to admission to the healthcare system. So this is all very reassuring in terms of infection risk to the general public, which again remains low nationally and locally.
I suppose that's good news. They weren't clear about how many people in her household she had had contact with, though. And then what do you do about that? Now, one of the reasons, one of the interesting things about the coronavirus, though, is that it is obviously, it's highly virulent. They're seeing increasing numbers every day in China, and the death rate seems to be remaining at around 3%, which is, when you stop and you think about that, well, that's not that much. The flu is a 1% death rate, but these are the kinds of viruses that humans do not have an antibody to, and there's no vaccine for it. And viruses, if you're not taken care of well, and not necessarily with medicine, because there's really no medicine that can help you except to bring your fever down. But if you're not properly hydrated, you're not aided with breathing in case you have lung complications or whatever it is, these things can be very deadly. So we are keeping our fingers crossed that this does not become a national problem. But it's justifiably alarming that the second case in the United States happened right here in Chicago. Checking in at
number four.
All right. Your pot dealer. And, you know, you all have one. I'm sure you do. Don't lie. Your pot dealer might soon be able to get his own license. That's right. The idea of small-scale pot peddlers being able to go to farmers markets and sell their wares is apparently becoming, it may be a thing. Community activist Teo Hardeman, who's president of the group Violence Interrupters Incorporated. Did you need to incorporate those? That should be a charity, 501c3, but that's a separate issue. I'll talk to Teo about that. Says that there has been unfairness in the letting of the contracts here, the letting of the licenses, I should say, for people who are opening up these, you know, the big dispensaries and other places where you're able to get, whether it's a medical dispensary or now these storefront dispensaries that are going to be opening throughout Chicago in the next couple of months, because there are no minorities involved. And he says the problem has been that the licenses are so expensive to obtain.
It's totally unacceptable that none of the marijuana dispensaries are owned by people of color. My vision would be a $250 peddler's license, and the young men can set up shop at farmers markets. There would be designated areas where they can sell the marijuana maybe from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. A response from the governor's office and the mayor talking about making sure everything is safe. But let me say this. Why does everybody have to make sure things are safe now that we're talking about empowering African-American males and females in the hood, so to speak?
It's an interesting idea. I wonder if they're... Can you license the guy in your mailroom? That's the question. But if it's 9 to 5, you're going to have to be somebody in the office. And everybody knows who the guy in the office is. You know what I mean? I know what you mean. So, all right. I don't think that's going anywhere, but at least it was a, it's an idea. Moving along. Checking in at...
Number 3.
Miami police officer has been suspended after drawing outrage for claiming at a public meeting that he identifies as a black man due to the one drop rule, which, of course, was the notion that if you had a single drop of blood, of black blood in you, you were black. And that was kind of a, an old racist way of segregating people and, you know, trying to keep people down. Now, he had previously, this guy had previously identified himself as a white Hispanic male. But the Miami Police Department then ran into a bit of a paperwork problem. And when the guy decided, you know, I'm no longer. No. Now I'm African-American. Wait till you hear this guy, because this is really something. Captain Javier Ortiz was named at the meeting of city commissioners of Miami on Friday as part of a complaint made by other officers that there is a disparity in the treatment of black officers in the department. So Ortiz was accused by other officers of having identified himself as black in order to get promotions based on lower exam scores. Just listen to this exchange.
I'm a black male. Yes, I am. And I am non-Hispanic. I was born in this country. That's how I feel.
I have a question for you.
Sure.
So you classify yourself today as a black male?
Yes.
When you applied for the police department, did you classify yourself as a black male or a white male at the time?
I think I put white male. I don't know if I, well, I know I put white male, but I don't know if I put Hispanic. I'm sorry?
You put down Hispanic male, didn't you?
Okay.
Okay.
I forgot what I was.
I don't think he did. Quite honestly, I don't think that's the issue. It gets better.
When did you have this coming to, with God moment that you were black? When did God tell you
that? Well, I learned that there's people in my family that are mixed and that are black.
I see.
Let's not talk about the degree of blackness.
Oh, no, you're blacker than me. That's obvious. And if you know anything about the one drop rule, which started in the 20th century, which is what identifies and defines what a black male is, you would know that if you have one drop of black in you, you are considered black. So you're probably black too.
Can we do a DNA?
You're probably black.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Wait, hold on. It's not over.
Nobody sent me here, nor did the city manager. I am my own man.
That's right, and you're your own black man, I know.
Yes, yeah. So now I'm being attacked.
Yeah.
Half of my family's Jewish, probably didn't know that either.
Thank you, you're fine, Minister.
Thank you.
Mr. Ortiz claimed that he was a black, now I hear Jewish black.
Oh,
I'm
hell.
Afraid maybe next month will be, you know, black Jewish woman, I don't know.
Why'd he have to go there?
This is out of a Chappelle Show bit.
I know. I mean, first of all, everybody in this is a jag. I just want to point that out. Obviously, this guy's trying to take advantage of something or trying to make a grander sociological point about fairness. And it's really a mean-spirited way he's doing it. But then it's showing off the stupidity on the Miami council. Because you got this guy now, what happened if he, next thing you know, this Mexican comes in here and he says, blah, black, and what if he's a woman? Oh, God.
When did you have this coming to, with God moment that you were black? When did God tell you
that? Well, I learned that there's people in my family that are mixed and that are black.
Uh-huh. That's how it goes. All right. I like that. And the guy didn't want to say coming to Jesus at the meeting. He was worried about that. Otherwise, but he didn't have a problem saying, well, next time we come in here, maybe you'd be a woman. All right. And hold on. Checking in at
number 2.
Because number 1 is the cut of the week. Which that should be, by the way, but it happened too late on a Friday. We have a great cut of the week. Very inspirational. All right, let's see here. Number 2, if there's a bucket list for things to do in Hollywood before you die, Jennifer Aniston just ticked 2 boxes less than a week. All right, she got her SAG award for The Morning Show. That's the Screen Actors Guild, by the way. They should change that. She took the reins of her first talk show when she stepped in for Ellen DeGeneres. That just ran a couple hours ago here in Chicago. Now, she's not a stand-up comic, but she's pretty good, actually. And it certainly helped that her guests were some people that she's known for a long time. Does it help when Will Ferrell is your guest?
I feel sexy when...
I put on my referee outfit.
What part of your body are you the proudest of?
Oh, butt implants.
Yeah!
That was easy.
Ooh. If you're flipping through the channels of, and one of your movies is on, mm-hmm. will you watch it?
100% yes.
Yeah! Who was your first celebrity crush, Will?
Oh, Joni on Happy Days.
Yeah!
Right?
Yes!
Right?
Well,
also, too, is it weird to say the mom on 8 is enough?
No!
There you go. There you go. See, that? See, we just cleansed the palate there with some good old-fashioned, you know, down-home humor right there. After we had to learn about the one-drop rule. Coming up, the Top 5-5 clip of the week, but... first, we got the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Here's Kim Gordon. Top 5-5 continues. We're at number one, which is the top five cut of the week.
Here come the Hawks, the mighty Blackhawks.
And it does involve our beloved Chicago Blackhawks. Hold on, let me, to officially open this up, you got to do that.
Number one.
Tuesday night, United Center. Two amazingly emotional events. You know, this is the 10th anniversary of the 2010 Stanley Cup Championship by our beloved Blackhawks. And there was not a dry eye in the house for either of these two events. At least that's what I said. And I can guarantee you that Kevin was also crying during this. And Lauren actually didn't. I noticed. Lauren stayed completely... she kept her wits about her.
But I actually smiled.
Yeah. Well, see, now that... See, there was that. That happened. Kevin almost fell over when that happened. All right. Here's the thing. We started with Patrick Kane... the celebration for his 1,000th point, which had been scored on Sunday night but at the United Center, but was celebrated on Tuesday. And then Coach Quenneville, Coach Q, returns to the United Center for the first time since being relieved of his duties, let's put it that way, by the team a year and a half ago.
Here it is, and the United Center crowd rising to their feet. A standing ovation for the great Joel Quenneville, former Blackhawks head coach. We'll just let you listen. Video snippets of the Blackhawks and their Stanley Cup championships. Intermittent shots of Q at the bench.
Those are not boos.
Partisan crowd. They will never forget. They will never forget the achievements of Joel Quenneville.
Coach of the decade is trying to hold it together behind the bench.
It was astounding, wasn't it? Because it just kept going.
Still gives me chills.
And it kept getting louder.
Yeah.
You know, normally it peaks out and you're kind of like, okay, this is everybody's going to start sitting down. And then they would show them again on the video board and people got even louder.
Then the officials were trying to start the game again because this was coming off of a TV commercial break. And they, you know, they go out to the dot. And the referee was just standing there by himself with the puck because the players were still around the benches, both Florida Panthers players and Blackhawks players. Because, right? I mean, you got to have both.
Roe was taking bets before the game on whether or not Q was going to cry, and I think it took every ounce of energy for Q to hold those tears in. He really
make me
was
a loser.
On the edge of losing it there, understandably. I think a lot of people were.
Oh, my. I mean, I did. It was so unbelievably emotional. And it was a beautiful moment for Patrick Kane, too, and his family who were there. They set up a red carpet for him, and he went out and he skated around a little bit just to take in the adulation of it. And that also coincides with, this week, the goal of the decade in the NHL. Uh-huh. The single goal of the decade was Patrick Kane's goal to win the first Stanley Cup championship of this era. Oh, this is the thousand. Oh, we're doing the thousandth goal? Oh, okay. All right. Hold on. I don't have this written down. Dear God. Here's the thousandth goal. The thousandth point that was actually scored on Sunday night.
Neil Pionk put it up the board. Picked off by Gustafson, left point. Put it down to Kane. Back on the net. He sent it in for Carpenter. To size, and he scores! And Patrick Kane has 1,000 NHL points! He'll get the second assist on this goal, and the Blackhawk players are all off the bench to skate down to the corner and mob Patrick Kane in the corner to the left of the Jets net. Congratulations, Patrick Kane! 1,000 career NHL points! What a moment for the Hawks!
That was a moment. That was a moment. And it was a beautiful... You had this sense on Tuesday night there, the entire sort of 10 years collapsed, you know, from the first Stanley Cup and then the 13 Cup and the 15 Cup, and that 10 years sort of collapsed in one moment for just a short period of time on Tuesday night before the Hawks in the second period went down 4-1. That was the only bummer of that night. But it was great to see and remember all of that stuff, at least.
Yeah. Kaner will be playing in the All-Star game tomorrow night.
Heard here on WGN Radio.
Heard right here on WGN Radio at 7.
All right. Okay. Are they cleaning out trash cans in back of you, Kevin? What are they doing here? You're at Sox Fest right now.
Right, and I'm in the media room where all the baseball reporters are typing out stories right now, so it's very quiet, but they are cleaning up the dinner that they served us here, which is quite lovely.
That's exactly what it sounds like. Yeah. Like those big, like, plastic trash bags now that you see at, like, industrial places and museums.
It's exactly what you're hearing. The guy's taking out, like, a massive garbage can.
Right. They're, like, super thin, and they make a lot of noise.
Yep.
They sound like cymbals. And there's a guy going, because it's at McCormick Place. So, hey, don't say anything to the guy. He's a union worker. He's got the thing. He's opening it up. I don't care. You might as well. I mean, if you were trying to save somebody's life, the guy would still be changing the liner in the trash can.
Right. Yeah. He's very focused. Did a great job cleaning up our mess.
Kevin's being very quiet now.
It's so awkward on broadcasting, and there's these baseball reporters who are just typing on their laptops.
Shh. Are they shushing you, too?
No, they're cool. I'm friends with all of them. Paul Sullivan's my favorite.
Lauren Lapka's got the traffic and the weather, and then this is something we've never done in the Canard Wagon before. We're going to try a non-alcoholic product. Thank God Kevin's not here for this. Lauren?